the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are going to be talking about Spooktacular, which is our third game in our set collection series. Spooktacular is a game set in a theater that shows old scary movies. And the plot is basically that the monsters from the movies are coming to life and they're terrorizing and eating the guests. So each of the players takes on the role of a horror movie, and often the protagonists from the movie, which are sometimes a little bit more abstract, although all of ours were, I guess, specific monsters. Well, Beasts of Business is kind of a little bit more abstract. But in any case, what you do is you have a board, which is a bunch of rectangular rooms next to each other with doors connecting them, and you move your monster around on the board, and you spook guests. There are little meeple guests on the board. You can spook them, which sends them into other rooms, and you get points for each one that you move through a door into another room. You can also devour guests. The meeples come in five different colors, and this is the set collection part. So when you devour guests, you collect them, and then when you have a set of five different meeples in the five different colors, you trade them in for a ticket, which is worth some number of points at the end of the game, but you don't know how many. And the really interesting thing about this game is it's asymmetric. There are 20 different monsters in the game, and they all feel quite different. For example, my monster, we played this twice, my monster in our second game was Chortlin Charles, who is a clown, an evil clown, and his whole thing is he spooks monsters and is quite good at spooking people. And after he spooks, he gets to devour all guests that are remaining in his room. So you kind of want to have a lot of guests in one room, spook as few of them as possible, and then eat the rest. But the other monsters have other abilities, too, are very different.
I was the Outlander, which my character wanted to gain a posse of different colors of meeples. And those let you do... You have to do, like, an automatic series of actions based on the colors of meeples you get.
Yeah. SETI actually has that mechanic in there too.
Yep. Which I was hoping for in this game to have, because the first time I played, the colors of the meeples didn't matter other than collecting your set. But this one I liked a little better just because now I was like looking around the board and thinking about what color meeple do I want to get so that I can do this action. And yeah.
Yeah.
And for that same game, I had the Revenge of the Angler. So I was an angler, a large fish that would hang around the outside of the board and try to eat people by creating doors to the outside. And it was kind of like this fun little thing where I would hop between these quote-unquote exposed rooms, and I could actually manipulate them a little bit too. And I had a lot of interaction with my discard pile, giving me access to new actions as well. So it was a little bit more planable than the previous one I had played, which was a lot more streamlined.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I find really interesting about this game is, you know, we've covered asymmetric games before. Mm-hmm. And I feel, the monsters in this game are quite asymmetric. But it's a lot simpler than the other games we've played. The rules to this are very easy to follow. There's only a couple concepts you need to explain, like spooking and like devouring up front. And then each of the monsters has turn steps, and you just go through this turn steps one by one. Like Chortlin Charles is play a card, number one. Two, if you spook this turn, devour all guests in your room. Three, move. Four, move another figure in your room. Five, draw back up to three cards. And one of the interesting things about this is all of these steps are mandatory, unlike a lot of other games. So you have to move. You have to move another figure in your room.
Right.
Everything in this game is mandatory unless it says you may.
Yeah, I really like that because it really kind of forces you to think about the sequence of events that will be unfolding. And it's not a crazy sequence, so it's easy to actually think through and like plan around it. And sometimes you can really plan that in a way that will be beneficial to you, which is great.
Yeah.
It seems like a game designer game. Like, you know, sometimes there's games that's like, ooh, this one is for game designers, because they'll appreciate like all those interesting rules that come out of these characters. That's just my comment. I think it's cool, like how many different feelings they can get from just a few different cards in your deck and a few different rules that change your order of operations of what you do.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mention that. You have a deck of cards. Each of us has a personal deck of cards, which is quite small. Generally, it's 7 to 10 cards. And 5 of those cards are just basic cards that everyone has access to. And then the other ones are unique cards that are just for our character.
Yeah.
And
yeah, which is nice because you get to understand the, oh, I have one card that devours by default. I have one card that spooks by default. And then a few other basic cards. And so you know remotely what's coming. But then, yeah, your own special 3 cards or 4 or 5 or whatever per character.
Yeah, combining a generic deck with some unique spice per character. And those few cards really are enough to make the character's deck feel unique.
If you're playing 2 to 3 cards out of your hand per turn, then you're cycling through that deck every other turn sometimes. You know, it can go pretty quick, which is great. So then you can have access to those things you really wanted again.
Yeah. The game has pretty heavy interaction, I would say. You do interfere with other players quite a bit.
Yeah.
There's a bit of take that, stealing points from players. Some of the monsters are also friendly and give points to other players as well. But there's definitely a lot of interaction in the game, although all mediated by the common medium of the board.
Right.
And the guests and stuff.
Yeah, and I think the first time playing, I felt like, ooh, there's Ananda's... I would maybe not want to play with. I think it's pretty interesting, actually, though. It's the first time I've seen a game mechanic that interacted with the scoreboard so much, where, you know, it's just the track of points going around the outside. But now Ananda, at the Beasts of Business, was putting out, like...
Spook futures
on the board. And if you hit that point on the victory track, you have to go back.
Or forward. Yeah.
Yeah, for himself.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Chutes and Ladders minigame.
Yeah.
But you're like trying to manipulate your score track in order to interact with that mechanic,
right,
which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's a cool mechanic, but I was using it in maybe a little bit of an impressive way because Charlie jumped way ahead of us early on. And so I just put a huge barrier in front of him that would send him back.
And it was interesting. It was not that... I wouldn't say it was that fun because a few turns I had to spin my wheels, but it was interesting to... realize, like, ooh, I have to either get 6 points or more, or my turn is wasted because I'll go a little bit and then he'll push me back. So, yes. It makes you play in a different way.
I guess that's what Devour is for, right? Because you can get points.
That's kind of interesting how the Devour is all off the track points. It's end game points versus the spooking, being moving you on the track.
Yeah.
Mid game.
Yeah, the so one interesting thing about the way that turns are set up in this game is that in general, well, except for Charlie's Outlander, but moving often comes quite late in the turn after you've done other things.
Right.
And in fact, the turns are set up generally so that you do stuff and then you set stuff up for your next turn. At the end of your turn, you set stuff up, which I think is great. It's an example of foreshadowing in games, specifically foreshadowing the player's future actions.
Sure.
Because since you know that they move at the end of their turn, you know that they're mostly going to be able to act in the room where they are right now. So you can plan around that for your turn. Of course, there are some characters like Charlie's character that can move before they act, which turns out to be very powerful in this game.
Yeah.
And there are also some cards, like all of us had the jump scare card, which lets you move and then play a card. So that's one way you can get around that sort of action or doing stuff followed by planning stuff. So there are ways around it. But in general, I think it does a very good job of foreshadowing your actions.
Absolutely, yeah.
The game also has, there's a static board, right? So, you know, you've, the board doesn't change, it's just the characters that change. And that's enough to keep it feeling different from game to game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, even just my simple movement change of where I would create doors to the outside, and I could only move between those as my move action.
Mm-hmm.
But I could move to any of them. So I could teleport across the board, but I can't go into the middle with my normal move, which is where the biggest room is that has the best chance to draw people into it and do big point scoring. So, like, I'm focused on trying to get things to the outskirts. So it really just, like, changed your perspective based on the kind of monster you're playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you feel since this series is on set collecting? Let's think about the game from that lens, too.
Like, yeah, for sure.
What do you... Like, obviously, you're trying to get all five colors, and it does push you in directions on the board.
Well, I honestly, for me, and this is what was going to be my takeaway, it's that having, when you have an asymmetric game that combines with set collection, I think it's really nice if you have that set collection be what unifies everyone towards a similar goal.
Hmm.
And so we can all see, like, okay, we all need five of the same color in order to get these tickets. The mm-hmm. tickets is what ends the game. So we all have that same core mechanic, even though our turns are all vastly different. We're all doing very different things mechanically. Like, but having that through thread between all of us,
yeah,
I think is a great, great way of resolving that.
Yeah, everyone wants to devour the guests.
Yeah, and you have to devour the different colors.
Yeah.
And you might be able to have certain powers with those different colors, or, you know, I might get them in different ways. But ultimately, you kind of learn that and know, like, okay, I know that Trevor is going to be able to harvest things from the, you know, the outside rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to not spook things in those rooms to not get him points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of develop your own strategies around it. But I think, yeah, I think that's a really cool way to resolve it, is just having the set collection be the same for everyone, but then build around that, this massive.
Yeah. It actually sort of reminds me of Root too. Mm-hmm. When we were talking about,
the cards.
The cards in Root, where there's three colors or four?
There's three suits, then the bird suit is wild.
Okay, oh,
right,
yeah.
Right.
So, and that, and having a score track, too, in Root, which, you know, I think having played Vast, which was the first Leader Games asymmetric game, and my feeling in that game was it was really hard to tell what people were doing, and what was good for other players. Mm-hmm. And I think in Root, what's nice is you can tell that cards are good for players, and each faction uses the cards differently, but that's a little bit of set collecting maybe for certain ones.
Well, yes, but the cards can also be crafted in Root, and crafting is another type of set collection because you need to have, what are they called? They're not workshops of the cat version, crafting buildings, I think, crafting pieces. But so you need to collect a certain set of crafting pieces to craft the card. And it's kind of interesting in Root because the different cards may all do the same thing no matter who crafts them, but it will be worth different amounts.
Right.
Like, for example, if it's a card that gives you extra actions, that might be okay for the birds, but the cats will absolutely love that because they have so few actions. But the cards are all fundamentally the same.
Sure.
When you craft them. And in here, the sets that you turn in are, they're all basically the same.
I will say, though, like with my Night Slayer from the first game, once I would turn in a set of Devoured Guests, I would then mosh, which would mean I would add five guests to my room and then spook them and get even more points.
Yes.
So, like, but we still have the same core of you turn in five things, you get the ticket.
And actually, now that I think about it, Chortland Charles is kind of like that in reverse, because with Chortland Charles, after you spook, you get to devour everyone who's left over.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's interesting.
I think my takeaway is the feeling of exploring by learning how these characters work. Not only your own character, but learning, like, oh, how did these characters work? Like, maybe we explained a little bit about how they work, but we didn't know the full power until you get it used against you. And you're like, oh, no, I'll remember not to do that next time.
Yeah, seeing Charlie running around and hitting Ananda, I'm like, I'm just going to stay out.
And I've thought about that feeling of exploration since talking with Ben of Floodgate Games. That's one of his big things is like you want players to feel like they're uncovering and learning new things as they play.
Mm-hmm.
Like you feel clever by doing that. You get like this feeling of like, oh, there's more possibilities than I even realized in this game.
Yeah.
And that definitely works for this game.
Yeah. And asymmetry is a great way to do that because there's just, the game's different depending on which characters are in. Every character feels different. You know, you have to change up your strategy depending on who else is in the game. I guess if you're get really good at the game, because some characters, you know, the usual thing might not work depending on who's there. Like, for example, I guess Beasts of Business, if you're really focused on getting points through spooking rather than devouring, Beasts of Business can create a barrier for you. So as a very rough example, I don't know if that's always how it would happen, but...
It does seem like some of the different monster powers had a bit of a learning curve or even a progress curve where you'd start to accelerate at different points.
Yeah.
So like some are really good early on, some are good later on. Like it's really interesting how dynamic that that arc can be for everyone.
And I think this game sort of follows the cosmic encounter philosophy.
I was just going to mention cosmic.
Because I don't think the monsters are balanced.
No.
Or at least they aren't balanced in a way that scales with player count. I think there are numerous monsters that are very different at a low player count than a high player count, either weaker or stronger. But it's okay. There's enough interaction in the game that it kind of self-balances in a similar way to Cosmic Encounter, at least partially.
Oh, you got to get those the white little guys away from Charlie because he's going to use a Screaming Eagle to get points on them.
Yeah,
balanced through politics.
Yeah.
I think that's okay.
Yeah. And the other thing it uses from Cosmic is the... Oh, this, it says if this is an easy, intermediate, or advanced level.
Yes,
the complication level.
I do, yes. I also really like the difficulty ratings. Basically, the way, in this game, the idea is easy characters are ones where they're suitable for new players. Intermediate characters are characters where they're suitable for advanced players. And people have played the game a bit. And advanced characters are characters that are suitable for advanced groups, where everyone's played a bit.
Yeah, so everyone understands, like, okay, like Peter had the goo guy when we first played.
And, I mean, I had Beasts of Business, which is an advanced character.
That too? Well, yeah, you're trying to do score manipulation.
Yes.
Which, like, the players having to do that
It matters very much to everyone else.
Yeah, and maybe also they probably put the ones in the advance that are maybe a little more, like, frustrating for new players
to deal with. I should probably not have chosen Beast of Business.
As the first one for us?
Sure, yeah, but it's interesting, though.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the game is short. Like it always ends sooner than I was expecting.
Yeah.
But that I think is good for this kind of game because it's like, well, I want to play again.
Yeah,
right
hop
away,
back in it.
Try a new character.
Yeah. I think it's a good length. It being short like this, the game definitely makes me want to try out other characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does a very good job of that.
It feels so unique. Just like Spirit Island, you know, you want to try out the different spirits and, like, see what you can do. And
also, they feel unique, but they're also so simple.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing I love
even
most.
Even the intermediate, like, there's a lot of text on here, but ultimately, and it's not hard to follow.
And playing it is just going through the steps.
Yeah.
I really love how simple the asymmetry is in this game.
Yeah.
And I think my takeaway might be slightly related to that, specifically the mandatory nature of the actions. Everything in this game is you must do this, then you must do this, then you must do this.
Mm-hmm.
Do this every time. I think that's really good, actually, because it takes away a choice that is maybe not always that useful. Like, often you're going to want to do all of these things.
Right.
And it turns... And not just the fact that they're mandatory, but also the way that they're set up here, where it's just your turn is go through this list of instructions and perform each instruction on the list.
Right.
That's it. And that works really well.
And but, and the actions are short. The steps are short. They're not like paragraphs. They're not like, you know. Yeah. In this case, you want to make sure. It's like, no, just play a card. Do this ability.
It's
okay, you're done.
Yes.
And maybe also good for a take that game, because it's like, well, I'm going to have to use this power that steals a point from you.
Sorry.
That's right.
I'm going to have to play this card, because if I just hold it in my hand forever, it's not going to help me. So I better attack.
That's right. Yeah, I think the combination of mandatory actions and just this very straightforward list of what you do on your turn that you follow works really well for simplifying the game, especially for a complex asymmetric game. This game makes me want to try my hand at some asymmetric games myself.
Yeah, again. For sure. Yeah, it's definitely giving me ideas for the kind of asymmetric thing I'm trying to do with one of my games again. Because, like, it's so clean, and it has a lot of that, almost like Spirit Island and Cosmic Encounter combined a little bit, where you have the simplicity, like, it's one sheet, a la, you know, Cosmic Encounter, but you have this, like, unique turn resolution, which is more like Spirit Island, where you have, like, the custom paths you can choose for your growth path.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I really like that simplicity combined with unique order of operations is a really neat thing.
Yeah.
Well, cool. That's Spooktacular. Tune in next week for our wrap-up bonus episode on Set Collection.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.